And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. And Buck, we made it, man. We've got NFL football this evening. How are you doing?
Look, good, man. Really excited about seeing the NFL kick off. Obviously, all the ceremonies and circumstance, pomp and circumstance that goes along with the NFL season kicking off. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on the Dallas Cowboys. The Buccaneers get a chance to unveil the banner. We get a chance to see a team that brings back 22 returning starters, which is unheard of in today's salary cap era. And so there's a lot of excitement, a lot of hype. And the great thing about football is we get to kick it off and see what's real.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. We previewed this game the other day, so we won't do that today. What we are going to do is we'll do our predictions. We're going to do it in our own fashion, as we like to do. We're draft obsessed, so we'll do it in a draft way. We're going to end up drafting. We'll go every other one and draft our MVP picks, defensive player of the year picks. We can do coach of the year as well. Why not? We can do coach of the year, and we'll do rookie of the year. So we'll do some drafting. So that'll take up the bulk of today's show. But before we do that, I want to get to this conversation here real quick, Buck, because I thought it was fascinating with the beginning of the NFL season and with an eye towards next year's draft, as we're always doing here on the show with our personnel background, everything kind of pointing towards that. So we did some homework on this, had a GM that brought this topic up, and I thought it was interesting. So we did our homework. He thought, man, this seems like a really low number of college free agents that made rosters this year compared to previous years. So this year there's 26. So only 26 rookie free agents made 53-man rosters this year across the league, 26. Mm. So when you look at that historically, we went and pulled the numbers, and our buddy Bill Smith did some digging for us. That is the fewest number of rookie free agents on opening day rosters since 1992.
Well, I mean, one, wow, that number is ridiculously low. Here's what I think may have played into it. The COVID situation may have played into it in terms of teams being more, I guess, lenient or gracious with those draft picks that were taken in and maybe didn't play. And so maybe they were a little more aware that we need to give some guys more time to develop. And so we can't make the hard and fast no right now. And so with our draftees, we'll make sure we give them all of the time to make the team, even into the season. And then with some of the other guys, the undrafted free agents, maybe it was a situation that when they signed them, they signed them with the sole intention of putting them on the practice squad at the end of the term, just because of trying to make sure you stockpile it, because that's the only reason I can see why teams would bypass the opportunity to have quote unquote cheap labor in a situation where everyone is looking to save a few coins just to make the salary cap fit work.
So there's different theories on this. The theory I'm working on is we had the free year for college. So we have these super seniors littered all over the National Football League. Those were going to be college free agents. The reason why they went back to school is because they weren't going to get drafted, but they were quality players, and we're seeing it across the college football landscape right now. We're seeing a lot of these super seniors make plays, and they're actually good players. So last year's draft pool was the thinnest in recent memory. Like you talk to teams and they got to the sixth and seventh round, like, we're flush out of names. Like, we don't have anybody left. You know, there's nobody left. They all went back to school. App State's got four senior receivers, super senior receivers, 6-year guys. So those guys, you know, one or two of those guys are going to make a team next year. So what it led me to believe is not only is it interesting that we don't have many this year, what it points to me is that next year's draft could be the deepest draft we've seen in quite some time, because it's an extra class of players that are going to be in the draft. So in other words, if you're picking in the sixth and seventh round in years past where it's like, oh, you trade a six, you trade a seven for this, that, and the other, like, those could be like good players, and you're going to get undrafted free agents next year. It's going to make up for this number. So like the previous years, for context, in 2020, there were 40 that made teams. Then there were 56, 59, 63, 70. There was only 26 this year. So those players, they don't like fall off the face of the earth. They still exist. They weren't in this group.
So that's a good point that you make about the pool being thinned out. I forgot to even think about the super seniors and those guys coming back, because it does change the equation. It changes the equation in terms of availability. Like what you have available, who you're picking from, who you sign to compete in training camp. We've always done it where when you sign an undrafted free agent, you're looking for redeemable qualities, meaning height, weight, speed, maybe it's production, but the other stuff is off. Maybe it's the situation where from an intangible or character standpoint, there's an issue that prevented him from being a draftable player. But typically they had those qualities that you're like, hey, if they're going to make the team, they're going to make the team because of these traits. This year, because the pool was lighter, you saw fewer guys who had legitimate opportunities to make the game. And it may explain why some of these preseason games, particularly in the third and fourth quarter, it got away from us and it was a little raggedy and it didn't really look like professional football at certain levels because you had guys who didn't necessarily have the traits that would typically be associated with being an NFL player in a training camp.
What do you think about the thought process of it's easier to hide guys now? It used to be with four preseason games, you have a college free agent. He's like, he's out there in the third and fourth, you know, or in the, you know, first and fourth games playing so much that you can't hide him. You know, you can't sneak. Yeah. You're not, you know, be like, he's undrafted. We get him with the practice squad. No problem. But now, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's fewer opportunities and you can more effectively hide some of these guys and you can get them in the practice squad.
Yeah, I think teams are definitely taking the practice squad option. The expanded practice squad rosters make it where you can beef up your practice squad, where if you have 16 roster spots, you can make four of those kind of, we've talked about it, the revolving door. Every 2 weeks, man, we're just bringing guys in, we're working them out, we give them a two-week audition, then we're on to the next. And I think there's some of that going. Also, the increased cap in terms of the amount of veteran players that you keep on the practice squad has also changed the evaluation. There are a lot of little subtle things that have happened in the team building aspect that has kind of changed the way that you put it all together. But this undrafted free agent thing, that is a very interesting deal because you saw on Twitter where people put out the stats about more undrafted free agents making rosters in those this year, like it was 415
or so. Yeah, not just this class, like any class.
Just in general. However, when you break down that only 26 of those guys are from this class, there is a significant and notable drop off because my contention was, look, we've always said day three, you could put day three rounds 4 through 7 in the undrafted, put them all in a bucket and draw a line in the middle.
Yeah.
And who's over under, like you just don't know because beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but it is definitely a changing evaluation process.
Yeah. I do think though on the math on some of that, because, and you might have engaged with somebody on this, but I saw somewhere on there, you know, when you compare the number of undrafted players versus seventh round players, well, there's 32 technically a year. And if we go by this, you know, the previous years, so you have 32 seventh round picks. Well, think about the pool of undrafted players that it's have vast. A chance to make
it's,
a roster.
It's infinite. So, yeah, it's infinite when it comes to that. I got into it with Jay Feely because Jay Feely was.
Oh, that's what it was. See, you're always in a fight somewhere on social.
Nah, like he brought up a point. I was just saying the Raiders drafted a player in the third round.
Yeah, Tanner Muse.
Tanner Muse was released and never really played. And he was expected to be a special team standout. And I was saying in rooms, we never take a salary. Special teams should be a secondary consideration when you're talking about days 1 and 2. You have to be able to play a position because to get a jersey, even though you're a special team standout, if someone gets hurt, you have to play. Mm-hmm. So that player has to be able to be a serviceable enough backup player that you can give him a jersey and say that if we get in a pinch, he has to be the dime player, the backup, he has to get on the field, and he has to be able to play well enough for us to get out of a game. Jay Feely contended, well, if that's the case, Bill Belichick would have never found Matthew Slater in the fifth round.
There's a big difference between round three and five.
As I said, rounds 4 through 7 are developmental players where special teams is a thing, but the goal for day three player is not necessarily that this guy is going to be our starter. When we take him in rounds 1, 2, and 3, there's a path to get him on the field as a starter. That's how they should be evaluated. And so that was my back and forth. Look, man, it is random and it's a guessing game. When you get someone in the 5th or 6th round that emerges as a starter, that typically is not supposed to happen. Those guys that come from those rounds that emerge as starters, they should have been drafted earlier, or there's a character flaw or medical issue that led them to go down. Like typically that's how it goes, but it's not, oh, I want to take my special teams player It doesn't happen like that.
Gosh, Buck, I just play nice.
I was playing nice. I told him, go ask a GM. Don't believe me. Go ask somebody. You work in TV. Go ask during the production meeting.
When you're in the room, though, there's that time when you get into the fifth, sixth round where you go, hey, special teams coach, I'll give you one pick. Like we've got 3 6 round picks. Like one of them's yours. So whoever you think the best special teams player is.
Right. Because DJ, we also know in the sixth and seventh round, you're really talking about a priority free agent.
Yeah.
Those are priority free agents. They're guys that we view as free agents that we want to sign, as opposed to their tiers to it. Mm-hmm. When we're talking 1, 2, and 3, those are players, and they need to be able to be players, positional players, not just special teamers.
Yeah. They had 3 third round picks that year. So you've got two of them that are gone. Yeah. But and two of them were somewhat projections, right? You had Muse, I believe, was a safety. You're projecting the linebacker. And they tried him as a running back, which I never got that.
Yeah. And he's now in Miami playing wide receiver, kind of doing
what he did
at Kentucky. So
yeah,
it's one of those things. But, you know, those things that come back to bite you. When you start missing in the second and third round year after year after year, it really erodes the depth on your team, because those guys are supposed to be your developmental guys that eventually become starters in year 2 and year 3.
Yeah. And, you know, you can make up for some of it because you hit on, Max Crosby outside those first 3 rounds. You hit on a Hunter Renfrow where they hit on him. Like, you can make up for some of it, but man, it makes the margins really thin. Like you, those guys, they don't necessarily be great players, but they're contributing members of your team.
They have to at least be on the roster doing something. Yeah. They can't be off the roster on somebody else's roster when you expended a draft pick on them.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's get to this draft here. MVPs, I'm going to give you the first pick. We'll do 3 apiece here. I'll give you the first pick, first run at it here, MVP.
Oh, that's easy. Give me number 15 with the Chiefs jersey. I'm going to go with Patrick Mahomes. Give me the best player playing on a team that wins a ton when he's there. Was he 38-8 as a starter?
Mm-hmm.
That's enough said. They've been to 2 Super Bowls with him at the quarterback. I think he has to be the front runner. That's why I have to take him.
Well, I think I drafted the Bills first in my Super Bowl contender draft, so I got to take Josh Allen with my MVP draft here. So I'll go Josh Allen first pick. You're up.
Man, Josh Allen right out the gate. I mean,
I'm big on the Bills this year, man. Bills Mafia's. I'm not angering them this year. I'm a member. Man, I got my table in the other room.
You're all in. Okay, so because the MVP award is voted on by writers and it's not one of those things with players, I think there's going to be a faction of folks that want Tom Brady to be the MVP. So I'm going to take Tom Brady with the second overall pick because the Buccaneers are loaded, 22 returners. And if they win, I mean, we're going to bow down and we're going to hail number 12, regardless of what he does. So give me Tom Brady.
Okay. That's easy. That's probably a smart pick there. My second pick, I feel like this is very chalkish. You know,
Go ahead. It's going to be chalk. Go ahead.
I mean,
you can take Aaron Rodgers.
Hold on. Nabil, can you join me for this real quick? Can you hop on? Nabil?
Yeah. How's it going? Here.
All right. Nabil, who's my pick? Go ahead.
Nabil, take off the jersey. No Aaron Rodgers jerseys.
I'll wear all my Packers gear this weekend.
With the second pick in the MVP draft, DJ selects
Aaron Rodgers.
Oh,
thank you,
gosh.
Nabil. Okay, you're good.
He doesn't even like the team that he's playing.
I got to take him. I got A-Rod. All right, you got last pick, round 3.
Well, it's tough. I mean, because we're just going to pick all quarterbacks.
Who wins the award?
All right, so this is the guy that's going to win the award, because maybe this is a surprise team that everyone is saying, but how about this? I'm going to take Baker Mayfield from the Cleveland Browns as an MVP candidate, because the Browns are going to win. They have arguably the most talented roster in football. And if all the credit goes to the quarterback, then Baker Mayfield is going to get a ton of credit for their success like he got last year. So give me Baker Mayfield as a dark horse contender. I would take him with my 3rd pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I like the Browns. I'm big on the Browns. I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's crazy at all.
I don't think it's crazy, because we just give it to – it's like the Heisman Trophy. It only goes to quarterbacks.
Taking him over Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be a better team than the Seahawks.
Yeah, they could be. But I don't know. Russell Wilson's looking out and seeing DK Metcalf on one side. He's seeing Lockett on the other.
He saw those guys last year.
Had a little more speed.
And then he melted. He melted down the stretch.
Yeah, he threw 40 touchdowns last year, Buck.
He did. He melted down the stretch.
Gosh. I'm not doing the Tannehill thing. I know some people are doing the Tannehill thing. No, I'll tell you what. I know I'm doing
Mac Jones. You can take Mac Jones.
No, I'm taking Lamar Jackson.
Oh wow!
Because I think that when you look at their situation with DK, I hate to see what happened with DK. Well, J.K. Dobbins. Why DK? I got DK in my brain talking about Russell Wilson. J.K. Dobbins being out, I think that Lamar is going to put a little more on him. I think he's going to put a little more on him. He's going to be a little bit more aggressive as a runner, which is a scary thought. And I think Lamar ends up collecting his second MVP. So he's my third pick. So you got Mahomes, Brady, Baker. I got Allen, A-Rod, and Lamar.
Yeah, I like
I feel good
guys.
About that. I feel good. We'll put this on social. We'll put this on social with a little poll, like who has the better teams. We'll do it for each of these categories.
I have two guys off the cover of Madden. I have Mahomes and Brady.
Like that usually ends well.
That in itself gives me the nod. And then I got Baker, the people's champ.
All right. Can we go defensive player of the year now?
Oh, defensive player of the year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You went first. So I get to go first, right?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Aaron Donald's an obvious one. Give me Myles Garrett.
Oh, look at you on the Browns bandwagon. Just all about it. Toot toot.
He's a freak, man.
I'm into that.
So I'll go Myles Garrett. Go ahead, okay. Take Aaron Donald. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I will. Like, you're gonna give me 99. Just let me have him. I'm gonna have him. He's only has three awards, so I'm gonna go and give him his fourth. So let's go Aaron Donald. That's easy.
Okay. AD. Now that was easy for you. Looking at my list of guys here. I'll tell you what, I don't feel great about the contract situation right now, but I'm gonna go with TJ Watt.
Oh, TJ
Watt. He's gonna join his brother and pick one up.
All right, here we go.
By the way, side topic real quick before we move on. If you're the Jets and they haven't signed him yet, do you at least make that phone call? The Jets have a ton of picks.
Oh, you can make the phone call to trade for him?
I would.
And if you're Kevin Colbert, like, how long do you even stay on this phone call? Like, what are we talking about?
You shouldn't, but you haven't got the deal done. So, obviously, something's keeping you from giving him all the cash that he really deserves. He's 26 years old. Like, to me, that's – if I'm the Jets, I know you're technically not really close, but that's the biggest need on your roster, and you could get arguably the best – I think he led the league in sacks last year. He's 26 years old. I'm not saying he's going to answer the phone, but I might call. I might at least try.
Leave voicemail. Yeah,
you get Carl Lawson. You get Carl Lawson back next year. You're quick ass.
I mean, I understand, and it's a very.
You can't blame me for trying.
No, it's a very ambitious thing. You have to at least call, like just like when Aaron Rodgers said he wanted out. You got to at least pick up the phone and be like, "Hey,
yeah, hey, what?" Okay, who's up? You up?
I got one. How about for a team that is still trying to figure out their nickname? How about Chase Young for the Washington football team?
Right team. Okay. You go Chase Young. Okay. Right team.
Wrong player?
I'll take Montez Sweat right after your Chase
Young. Oh, man. I'll take them as a duo, breaking Chris Dolan and Keith Millard.
Look, I've been studying these guys all week. I've been studying them all week, getting ready for this Charger game. Montez Sweat does some things that Chase Young can't do.
I mean, like they both
He can bend. He can bend. He's got more burst. His length is ridiculous. What he does, I love Chase Young. Give a huge grade, and he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. Right now, I think Montez Sweat's a better player than Chase Young.
I mean, maybe it's the Derek Jeter A-Rod thing. You know, I mean, yeah. you can have A-Rod. Like,
no, I got player. No.
You got A-Rod. Yeah. You got A-Rod who might be the better player, but
no, see, because Jeter was there and then A-Rod came in. Technically, Montez Sweat was there, then Chase Young came. So no, you got the right analogy, you got the wrong dude. All right, your last pick. Go ahead.
Ooh, last pick. This is tough because
we're all taking pass rushers, but we went all quarterbacks and we've been going all pass rushers. Give Darius Leonard some love. Come on.
No, I'm not giving Darius Leonard because there's another guy. You have the right team. You have the wrong player. DeForest Buckner.
Yeah, I
like DeForest Buckner is the That's guy that kind of makes it happen.
He was in the mix for me.
Yeah. Like.
By the way, I know this was my thought process. If somebody handed me an affidavit right now with a sworn affidavit, David, that said that Nick Bosa was going to be healthy for 17 games.
You would take Nick Bosa?
I probably would have taken him with the first pick. I gotta
take
wait
Nick over Joy. You take Nick over Joey?
Oh man, I love Joey. Joey's got to stay healthy for the full year too. Joey probably should have been picked in this. He's right in that mix.
I mean, then you got another guy. You got another safety back there. They're right there. You see the home team every week. Everyone, but you're trying to separate yourself from.
I'm not being called a homer, and I'm not putting any jinx or any kibosh on the Chargers. So I'm just laying low here. Let them stay healthy, and let's off we go. Okay, rookie of the year. You get to go first.
Rookie of the year. I am going to take Mac Jones just because I feel like it goes against everything that I've said about him, but I feel like there's this groundswell of support that people are just looking for anything that is even a hint of Tom Brady-esque, he's going to get credit for. So give me Mac Jones. I don't think the numbers will be anywhere close to warrant it, but if they win and they win like they should win with the team that they've constructed, he's going to get a lot of love.
Rookie of the year, you want Mac Jones. Okay, that's a popular pick. I'm gonna go. Here's my offensive rookie of the year. Do we just do one? Right? Is that what we're doing? We do a defensive rookie of the year.
Let's go. One offensive rookie.
Let's year do one. If we can go fast, we can get him in. So I'll go. I'm gonna go to the New York Jets, Buck. And it's not Zach Wilson.
Oh, you're going Elijah Moore?
I'm going Elijah Moore with my first pick for offensive rookie of the year.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Wow.
Go ahead. We got to move. We got to keep it moving.
Okay.
I don't have time for your criticism.
That's a great one. That's new.
He's not going to have Justin Jefferson numbers, but he's going to be in the ballpark.
So I only got one pick. So my pick was Mac Jones. So my
we just get one for offense, and then we'll get one for defense.
Okay. So now where are we at? We're on defense.
Yeah, defensive rookie of the year.
You get to pick, man. You get to pick snake draft.
Oh, I get to go first.
You get to go first.
Okay. In this one. All right. I'll tell you what. This is going to be a home. See, I'm going to get hit with the homer pick on this one. It's going to be a little bit off the radar.
Ooh.
Am I going to do this? That's close.
Are you going because you know his dad? Because you saw his dad.
I was around his father. Correct.
Asante Samuel
Jr. I'm going to Asante Samuel Jr. for my defensive player of the year, the defensive rookie of the year. Because he's going to get balls because the Joey Bosa is going to heat people up. And then people are going to test him out a little bit.
He's going to squat on everything.
Sit on everything. Just like
he's ignoring all. He's just going his dad.
Oh, yeah. You did. Nabil put it in there. He's like, Bucky knew where I was going right from the beginning. Micah Parsons was in my thought process.
Well, I'm going to take him. Yeah. Since he's in your wheelhouse, I'm going to take Micah Parsons because I believe the Cowboys are actually going to build this defense around him. His versatility and toughness, the way he comes off the edge, he can be a problem, man. You can already see on tape. When you watch him in the preseason, he is all over the place. I think they will unleash him. He's going to have a ton of production.
All right. I like that we didn't just go with the standards, you know? We could have gone Trevor Lawrence, you know, Zach Wilson.
I could have gone, like, if I had to do it, my runner-up would have been Najee Harris.
Yeah.
For the Pittsburgh Steelers.
See, those are – but that's too easy. We had to have a little fun with it. Okay, we've got Coach of the Year. Let's go – we can go. Let's sprint through three. We'll each get three here. I'll let you go first here, Coach of the Year.
Coach of the year. I'm going to go with this guy because I think he's stubborn. I think his stubbornness might be rewarded. Let's go with John Harbaugh with the Baltimore Ravens. I do not believe that the Baltimore Ravens are going to revamp their offensive scheme. I do not believe that they're going to suddenly have the ball flying all over the yard. I believe they're going to stick with this running game that has allowed them to be the leading rushing team the last 2 years. I'm going with John Harbaugh. I'm saying he sticks to his conviction.
I like that. You know three things that I like in life, Buck?
What do you like?
I like McGriddles.
Oh, gosh.
I like McNuggets.
Oh, my goodness.
And I like McDermott.
I thought you were saying Mike McCarthy.
That's not a Mick. That's a Mac. If I would say Big Mac. Big Mac. No. I'm going McDermott. McDermott. Give me. I'm all in on the Bills. I got McDermott with my first pick.
I mean, you're all in. MVP. You picked him to go to the Super Bowl, so then Coach naturally has to flow from that. I'm going to give you another pick, a team that I believe is on the rise, and they're going to surprise. How about Mike Zimmer and the work that he will do with the Minnesota Vikings?
Okay. All right. Well, a lot of times these awards don't go necessarily to the best team. They go to the team that made the biggest improvement. And so I'm going to go with the home team here. I'm going to go with Brandon Staley because I think this Charger team is going to win a lot more games than they did last year. So I'll go Brandon Staley.
See, I see, because Brandon Staley is an intellectual. He appeals to your intellectual sensibility.
We just used his clip on the podcast the other day,
which was fascinating. See, it was great.
We're selfish. He's given us something, and now we give something back.
He certainly gave us some quotable. So I think that I'm okay with that. Well, I mean, if we're going to go coach of the year, this team went from being out of the mix to in the playoffs last year, won double-digit games, and now we talk about them being a Super Bowl contender. So let's go with Kevin Stefanski and the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. That's a solid one. I'm going to stay on this kind of improved theme. Mm-hmm. I know, man. I'll go Kyle Shanahan. They're just going to be so much better than they were last year. Just they can't help it. And he's got an insurance policy now with Trey Lance. So,
yes,
I'll go with Kyle Shanahan. So that's my third pick. Do you have one more, Buck? Or did you go first?
That was it.
That was it? So who was your first pick? Oh, you went Harbaugh. Yeah.
Harbaugh. Yeah, being stubborn.
So you had Harbaugh, Zimmer. You went Harbaugh, Zimmer, Stefanski.
Yep.
And I came with McDermott, Staley, Shanahan. That's a good draft right there, man.
It is.
Solid draft. All right. Anything else you want to add here, Buck? I know we had to do kind of an abbreviated show today because we're both running around like crazy. But anything else?
We have something. But I will say this. This is a college nugget. We didn't really talk about the performances that we saw all weekend from the quarterbacks. But Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell both struggled in their debut. Yep. DJ, I do wonder, because you know how first impressions really matter. I do wonder when we have this trade thing that's hanging out there in Houston with DW4, and if all that stuff is cleared up, I do wonder when people look at this and they're trying to assess what they would give up for a franchise quarterback as they're looking down the road. I do wonder if the Texans might eventually get their asking price, because when you look at the college game, you're like, I don't know. That's a lot to give up. It'd be interesting to see, but like those guys have to play much better if they're going to command the kind of attention that we thought they were going to command during the preseason.
Do you know how easy the marketing is going to be when the Houston Texans with their cowboy hats on say they're going to the OK Corral, the OK Matt Corral? I mean, that's coming, Buck. I mean, the marketing is all right there for you.
Done. Hey, man, how good was he?
He looked good. I mean, Louisville's defense was awful.
I felt like that. I've been on the sideline in the last couple of weeks, kind of feeling like that. Like, hey, guys, second half, you know what we're doing? We're playing for pride. We're going to see if we can outscore the second half. Let's see if we can win the second half.
Nick Saban, did you see Saban's stuff the other day? We're reading our clippings and we're not focused. And if you look at the second half, it was a 17-10 game. I'm like, beat the stuffing out of that Miami team. Find something to be upset about to get the guys motivated.
How good are they, man?
That's not fair.
I will say this. It was a treat to watch them play and then to watch that old school game of Georgia and Clemson. And it was different, but just the talent and just how they built different. Like, Georgia.
Georgia's
team is just built. I mean, they are just.
Nobody wants to hear it. And I know they don't like hearing this in Oklahoma. And I know they don't like hearing this at Ohio State and Clemson.
It's a different ball game.
It's different. It's a different. That league is different.
It's a different ball game.
Different.
It is a different ball game. When you look at just the way that Georgia and Alabama are built in the trenches, and you look at those big athletic bodies that are.
I didn't play anybody, but look at A&M, how those guys were built too.
Even the physicality. Like, it was funny, you hear about how people took different approaches in the preseason, and in the SEC, they're like, oh, yeah, no, we're all contact all the time.
Yeah, we're banging.
The only way you get used to hitting fastballs is we're going to throw fastballs at you at practice. And you can tell the physicality and that stuff. You do worry, are they going to be able to hold up the full season? But, man, coming out the gate, they certainly were impressive with the physicality and toughness.
Yeah, well, the thing with Alabama that makes them so special is it's like, uh-oh, we just lost a stud on defense. Oh, hold on.
Next up. There you go. Your turn. Next up.
It is. It's what it is. It's like going to the store. You go to the grocery store, and you have that big bin of apples, and you go to pick one, and one falls off and hits on the ground. You're like, oh, all right.
I mean, it is unbelievable just the talent. And like Nick Saban had to talk about it. They're like, hey, have you talked to any rookies or your NFL players? He's like, dude, we got
I can't keep up with all of them.
70 guys in the league. I can't keep up with everybody. But the talent that just comes out there, that is why in the scouting biz, you typically put your best scout in the in the Southeast, because that's the SEC. You can see all the guys come out. And we can sit here and act like, oh, you know, I can see it's better. No, it's not. No. It's not. And I hate to admit it, but it's not. The SEC is just a different.
It's completely different. The last thing on Alabama, I was doing a radio show in Birmingham, and they were asking about teams that could surprise. And I was like, you know, Washington, because of, you know, that defensive front. And you look, obviously the ends everybody talks about, but then you've got Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, you know, what they do, blah, blah, blah. And then I go, my other team would be Denver, and you kind of look at them and what they can bring to the table. And you look at Pat Surtain, and then also, you know, you got Jerry Jeudy. I'm like, oh my gosh, Alabama's dudes are everywhere. Like every team one of the reasons you like them, because they got a bunch of Alabama guys.
And here's the one thing that we'll continue to say, and we'll talk about this later as we get into coaching down the line. Great players make great coaches.
Yeah.
The better players that you have assembled on your roster, it's a lot easier to coach those guys than to make it up. And I think when you're looking at Alabama and some of the other teams that we talk about, when you have a collection of great players, man, it's a lot easier being on the sideline than when you got guys that you're having to piecemeal together and you're having to out-scheme everybody. It's harder to do it that way.
The other thing I would look to, and this is a project for us later down the line, we'll get into another day, but the hit rate on Alabama players lately, pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think they fixed that little issue where we're like, you know, I don't know about Bama players. Like,
they're too beat
maybe
up.
They're all tapped not. I don't know. No, they're getting, they're getting really good players. And DJ, when we've talked to a bunch of them, Najee Harris and all those guys, you ask them about the process and those things.
They're pros.
They are pros. Like, they get it from the jump. They understand exactly who they are, where they're trying to go.
And body maintenance, all that stuff.
It's a different ball of wax. Okay, I got to give you this. Yeah. I talked to my guy. I know he's going to be listening, but I talked to one of my guys in baseball, and he's working with a company. He said they're working with a company that does this cognitive testing and stuff. Yeah. And he's like, DJ, so like some of the stuff that you see from the rookies who may or may not struggle going to the National Football League, like these tests can kind of tell you from a cognitive standpoint what might be some of the issues. For instance, the wide receiver in Cincinnati, Ja'Marr Chase, who's struggling catching the ball, who has said like he's having a tough time because there are no stripes on the ball. Some would say that there was some testing that would indicate that that might have been an issue going forward. So as we always talk about next level scouting, how we level up in this biz, you talk about GPS stuff and all that. Teams are just going to another level when it comes to understanding who players are and what they could be at the next level.
Which, by the way, begs the question. The last year where you didn't play, were you playing catch with a Nerf Turbo? Like, were you not playing catch with an NFL ball for the last year?
Yeah, no. I understand that. And it's funny because we speculated, like, some guys coming out of the pandemic might struggle because the year off. I will give him a little bit of a pass on, hey, it is a difference going from catching a ball with stripes to a ball that doesn't have stripes. However, when you've had a full year, when you're training, I can't really give you that as the excuse. Like, I can't. It's not different, vastly different from a college ball to an NFL ball. If he was in the CFL where the ball is fatter, then I would say, like, oh, that's different. But this is something, like, now it's a confidence issue because he's dropped a ton and people have talked about it. So now you're thinking about things that you never thought about. But, I mean, it's a weird thing because I didn't see that as an issue. I don't even have notes on my thing like, oh, he drops balls and this and that. But I will say this. I'll go back to a guy who challenged me who worked around the LSU program, and he compared Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. And he told me Justin Jefferson is the dude. And when you look at them go to the next level, it won't be close because he is the alpha. He was the alpha in that room. And right now, I have to call my guy and be like, yeah, man, you might be right.
Yeah, it's still early in that. But Justin Jefferson, he hit that. That's for sure. There's no doubter what he is. All right. I know we got to scoot here, Buck. This has been fun. Looking forward to a full weekend of NFL football. Do want to encourage everybody. We've got the Move the Sticks TV show that is going to be launching on Monday. And that is going to be every week. It's going to be an hour show. It's going to be on digital. So you can find it on NFL.com. But then it's also going to be on the network. Nabil, what time? I want to say it's a noon. Is it a noon West Coast? Yeah, noon Pacific. So 3:00 Eastern on Monday. It's going to be a full hour show. Rhett Lewis, our buddy, is going to host it. with Bucky and myself, and we're going to get a chance to dig in on what just happened from the NFL weekend. So the Aftermath show, if you've watched that in the past, that is stepping aside for at least this year. We'll see if it comes back next year. But the Move the Sticks show is going to be up and running, Buck, and I'm fired up about it, man.
Hey, man, I'm fired up as well. It should be a lot of fun. It should be a lot of fun to tune in and check it out. A little X and O's, a little game day reaction, a little day after
rookies,
reaction.
Look at some rookies, all that good
talk
stuff.
Talk about all that stuff, some of the great things that we saw over the course of the weekend. And so it's here. It's here, DJ. Regular season about to kick off.
Wow, I appreciate it, man. It's going to be fun. Fired up about it. And I want to thank you guys again for leaving us some of those reviews and ratings there on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate those. Again, next time we meet, we'll be discussing what went down in week one of the NFL season. How awesome is that? Looking forward to it. Appreciate you guys. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.